The magnificent Krekka grabbed the bloody end of the pipe with one hand and gave Azimuth a hard shove in the chest with the other.
Give it to me. I want a turn swinging the pipe.
Hell no, motherfucker.
In case you forgot, you work for me, Azimuth. Me and the Magus.
I used to work for you, bitch. No more. Now I do just what old Marley here says.
Krekka glared at Baron Kerr, who stood with his arms crossed over his chest. Then, without warning, Krekka ducked forward and headbutted Azimuth. Ah! The black man's nose crunched under the blow, and bright blood gushed from his nostrils.
You little piece of shit!
As the carny master tried to wrench the pipe away, his scout fought back. Azimuth landed a hard right to the side of Krekka's head, then jammed the end of the pipe into his solar plexus. Krekka doubled over and went down, but he pulled the off-balance Azimuth along with him. The two big men crashed to the ground and began rolling around in the dirt. Over the next 30 seconds, they each had their moments. Krekka hammered the scout's face with consecutive rights and lefts. Azimuth got his big hands around the carny master's throat and squeezed until his face turned purple. It was the Baron who finally broke up the scuffle. He picked up the pipe and gave each of the men a solid whack in the legs. Krekka got to his feet first.
I want to take my turn on the last guy. Azimuth's already done two.
I like how he handles the pipe. A sweet swing.
With that, Kerr handed the weapon back to Azimuth. The ringmaster was then forced to watch with the others as Azimuth wound up and hit another long ball. When the shuddering from the chair had stopped, he shouldered in beside the black man to help him load the last body into the cart.
You're dead meat.
We're all dead meat, bitch.
Kerr threw a couple of axes and machetes and a tree limb saw on top of the corpses. Then he set off across the square, gesturing for the crowd to push the cart after him. On the north side of the ville was a narrow track that led up the mountainside. Judging from the deep wheel ruts, the cart had been the only vehicle to traverse it in a very long time, and had traversed it often. Krekka didn't do any of the pushing. He walked a short distance behind and stopped to look back when the procession was halfway up the slope. He saw something no one else did. What he saw was a place of enormous wealth and luxury homes, a suburban development that had miraculously been left untouched by Skydark and decades of nuclear winter. And it was deserted. All there for the taking. There was only one person keeping him from taking it all, Baron Kerr. The last of Kerr's men lay dead in the cart. So far, the job of Baron looked but simple to Krekka. Much simpler and much less dangerous than running a carny and mobile gas chamber. Pick some bounty, slam some heads, that was all. Easy enough for a cold heart like him. He stared at the low concrete block building at the foot of the slope. It was the most secure structure in the ville, and where he knew its most valuable treasures would be kept. A pre-dark pump house. He could see the huge pipes running down the mountainside to the back of the building. No doubt they had something to do with the pool's water level. A tug at the tail of his ringmaster coat made Krekka turn. He looked down to see Jackson staring up at him with dead black eyes.
I thought you were dead.
The naked Sticky started to sing and dance to try to make up for biting the hand that fed it. But it all sounded like screeching to Krekka now, and the dancing wasn't like dancing at all, more like a perpendicular grand mal seizure. The carny master was not amused and wanted no part of it. He hauled off and booted Jackson in the backside, sending it tumbling down the road. When Jackson didn't go away, Krekka reached down and picked up a large stone. Struck and bleeding, Jackson slunk away over the hillside, still in its choke collar and trailing chain leash. The procession crested the rise, then followed Baron Kerr downhill to the muddy bank beside the pool.
Stop here!
When the Baron handed out the cutting tools, Krekka was first in line to take one of the axes. The job was messy but not difficult, because the tools had been honed to razor sharpness. After the first body had been chunked, Kerr started lobbing the pieces into the pool. Almost at once, the huge lungfish rose to the bait, swirling and splashing on the surface as they fought over their dinner. Krekka enthusiastically returned to the chopping. As he did so, he noticed Kerr staring at him. The carny master smiled at the ville's headman as he brought down the axe.
You're next, you bastard.
Baron Kerr had learned not to trust rays of hope. Like everything else in his ever-shifting world, they'd always proved to be illusions, cast by the burning pool for its own inexplicable ends. Yet as he watched the man in the red coat struggle on the ground with the Black Scout, he had the first inkling of what might be possible. While it wasn't unusual for people to fight for the right to be next to sit in the clobbering chair, no one had ever demanded the right to be executioner. To test his suspicion, he had given the pipe back to Azimuth, then studied Redcoat's reaction. The Baron saw fury in the man's eyes, fury at having been denied pleasure, fury directed at him, the denier. Which was good, very good. If the anger was real, and not some figment of his own imagination, it was also a first. The spores and bounty had always produced compliance, not demanding, not impatience, above all, not envy. Azimuth had only battled to keep the pipe because the pool entity, speaking through Kerr, had commanded him to use it. Assuming that the pool had absolute control of Redcoat, it was making him behave differently than anyone else ever had. Whatever his hallucinations were, they too had to be markedly different than anyone else's. The Baron kept his eye on Redcoat as Kerr led his flock and corpse cart up the zigzag trail to the pool. He noticed when the red-haired man paused and looked back at the vill. The expression on the newcomer's face was one of desire. What was he seeing down there? As Kerr moved up the grade, he swam in a sea of the dead. Vague floating specters surrounded him, drifted through him, over his head. The innumerable ghosts of the pool. He could see them through closed eyelids. Every one of them had drawn his or her final breath in the clobbering chair. The mark of the iron pipe on their skulls. Kerr had become so used to these horrors that they'd become nothing more than annoyances. Once he had had a life, though he could barely remember it. Once he had had faith, though that was dead to him now. The pool had taken everything. It had taken his soul. When the procession reached its denuded bank, the pool was quiet. It reflected the peach and turquoise of the sunset and the black fringe of the trees along the ridgeline above. The flock looked to Baron Kerr for further instructions.
The body is never alone. It has gathered and keeps a web of creatures around it, a family connected by the chain of life. Each member of the family performs a different task or set of tasks, all to ensure the body's health and well-being, and the body in return ensures the health and well-being of all its family members.
He pointed at the tools in the cart and the corpses under them.
As loyal members of that family, we have one more job to perform. The dead must be cut up in small pieces so the fish in the pool can eat them.
Several of the newcomers eagerly grabbed the implements and immediately set to hacking up the corpses into chunks. Redcoat showed a particular zeal for the task, and he kept looking up from the gruesome work, wiping the spattered blood from his face with his coat cuff and shooting Kerr a look of absolute hatred.
Do you really think that one's your ticket on the last train west?
Kerr glanced down and saw a 6-foot-long lungfish bobbing in the shallows.
Could be. If nothing is impossible, then anything is possible.
You've got to be kidding. How many times have you thought you had a way out of this place? 100? 1,000? Face facts, the pool's never going to let you go, Baron. You're its A number one boy. Forever.
What do you know? A talking fish? You might not even exist. You might be just another hallucination.
Well, this hallucination is getting mighty hungry. How about tossing me some chow?
Kerr walked over to the cart, picked up some of the pieces that had fallen on the ground, and flung them as far out into the lake as he could.
You could have just handed me one.
With an angry swish of its wide tail, the fish turned away from the shore and swam to join the feeding frenzy that had already begun. The Baron watched Redcoat continue to work on the remaining bodies and to shoot him more evil looks. Kerr became more and more hopeful that the man had the right stuff for a much more difficult job than quartering a torso, that he had both the homicidal tendencies and the unique brand of delusion necessary to end the Baron's own intolerable suffering. Standing there, Kerr had a sudden chilling realization. After killing him, Redcoat would most certainly throw him into the pool. The Baron had never considered the likely consequences of his being chopped up and fed to the fish. All he'd wanted was to be dead and gone. But now that he saw that dying might really be possible, it became clear to him that dying might not mean escape. He had to think of something fast.
Time to reload. Deathlands is continued on the next CD.
20 against 1? Impossible odds.
Give up! You have nowhere to go!
Didn't say for who. The executioner. The man with a body count higher than the mileage on your truck. www.cuttingaudio.com